Hi, everybody. Welcome to the latest episode of the Fertility Answers Podcast. I'm Neil Chappell, and today I'm recording all by myself in respect to and out of concern for coronavirus and the quarantine that everyone is respecting at this point. So this is a social distancing podcast. In lieu of the fact that we can't really sit down and have a conversation with anybody right now, and the most we can do from a fertility standpoint right now is optimize natural fertility, I thought this would be a great month to talk about environmental factors and how they impact fertility. Number one, it's really not an easy podcast to do with interviewing a patient, but number two, it's a very appropriate time for me to just give a little bit of a public service announcement for things you can do while waiting. So before I get started, I think it's important to tackle a few basic concepts that will kind of hopefully help to color in why it's important to consider environmental factors in the realm of fertility. Real briefly, the inner workings of the human body, they're all listed on kind of a master manual. We call that the genome. The genome itself is made up of DNA. DNA is what's stored in each cell, and it's basically the blueprints for how each cell does everything. Different cells read different parts of the DNA to perform the different tasks and functions that they do day in and day out. How it works is your body transcribes the DNA, and then that transcription is then followed by what we call a translation, where you transcribe the message off the blueprints, and then you translate that into a protein or another downstream function that yields the outcome that you want. So skin cells can be skin cells, and liver cells can be liver cells, etc. What genes you have in your genome, that is you're considered your genetics. How you read those genes, how good you are at transcribing or translating those genetics, that's called your epigenetics. A guy named David Barker, a few decades ago, did some really impactful and novel studies that showed that the environment that a baby is exposed to while gestating impacts how accessible the genes in someone's genome are. And that, later on in life, impacts how good cells are at being themselves. What this ultimately means is that exposures in pregnancy translate into lasting effects in offspring, well into adulthood, and this is regardless of what happens after birth. This really kind of informs that there's this critical time where the genome is being modeled to be read for optimal use and, like I said, accessibility later in life. Basically, think of the development of a baby. You're developing your genes at the same time. You're bookmarking all the important stuff that you're going to need later in life. And the uterus, or the environment in the uterus during pregnancy, informs what genes you're going to bookmark and maybe what genes you're not going to have as easy an access to. So this kind of informs why environmental exposures can be an issue. Direct toxicity to cells is pretty obvious. So sometimes toxins or environmental exposures are just directly toxic to the cell, but sometimes they can disrupt the environment and change it to where cells think they need to perform a function in another way that's maybe not as efficient as if it would have happened without those exposures. And it's not a leap to say that eggs, sperm, and embryos are incredibly sensitive to these exposures, not only because of the direct effect on the cells, which are susceptible, but also because of these alterations in epigenetics too. So that being said, let's kind of tackle some of the more classic endocrine disruptors and then get to the actionable stuff of, okay, what the heck do we do about this? There's over 80,000 chemicals that are registered in the U.S. alone. So exposure to reproductive age women and pregnant women, it's unavoidable. It's going to happen. The question is, you know, how aware can we be of the high risk areas and the high risk activities to keep us as close to a safe zone as possible? The major contributor to exposure is food, both in the packaging and the preservatives in our food, as well as more obvious things like pesticides and pollution. So many of these things that we're going to talk about, they cross the placenta and affect an adverse pregnancy, but they've also been shown to be able to affect eggs and sperm during their development, and ultimately, of course, fertility treatment success in IUIs, IVF, and then, of course, like we touched on at the very beginning, subsequently the health of a child as they are, as they grow up into adults. I do need to pause for a second and say that a lot of this podcast was gleaned from literature reviews that I've done from some really, really great people that have done some wonderful work in this field. Patricia Hunt is famous for some experiments that she did with bisphenols, which I'll touch on in a bit. But Dr. Linda Judice has also done some really great work. And one of her mentees, Dr. Talia Segal, was in fellowship with me, not in the same institution, but at the same time that I went through. And she did some amazing work in her fellowship looking at the role of the environment and fertility. And so I'm remiss if I don't take my hat off to some of the work that they've done. But anyway, let's break things down a little bit. Let's talk about heavy metals. So the famous ones are mercury and lead. Mercury, we are exposed to that through fish most commonly, because these heavy metals have a tendency to accumulate in fish. And then lead, the famous example is paint. Any paint before the year of 1978, but you also need to think about lead in imported makeup, jewelry, pottery. Also, one to consider is cadmium. Where you find that the most in America is in smokers. So secondhand smoke is also an issue too. Or if you work next to a battery factory or a place where there's a lot of electroplating. So what do we do to avoid this? For mercury, it's recommended to just limit fish to 1 to 2 servings of healthy fish a week. The healthy fish, here are the easy ones to remember, especially in Louisiana. Shrimp, salmon, and catfish are three that are tend to be pretty safe. Canned light tuna and pollock are also safe in pregnancy. But no matter where you live, check local advisories for the locally sourced fish. And that can kind of give you an idea of what is a higher risk. For lead, this is pretty simple advice, is that if you've got a house built before 1978, anytime during the preconception or pregnancy period, that's not a great time to do some house renovations. So I would just be very careful when it comes to that. If you've got some pottery or some imported cosmetics and you're not really sure what's in them, don't cook with that pottery, and maybe just avoid the imported cosmetics altogether. Buying organic grains and root vegetables also lowers the risk for having cadmium exposure from the soil. And then actually cadmium has a tendency to accumulate in organ meats, things like liver. So avoiding organ meats during this time too. Moving on to pesticides. To minimize exposure there, you also try and want to buy organic. There are a few of the more famous foods that are more susceptible to pesticide, absorption, therefore increasing the dose that you would get of the pesticides when eating them. These are known as the Dirty Dozen, if you want to Google it and read a little bit more about it. Grapes, plums, peaches, string beans, potatoes, kale, strawberries, apples, pears, spinach, celery, and peppers. So, you know, bottom line here as far as avoidance, wash your food. Honestly, kind of an impactful thing too that's really simple, just take off your shoes before going inside. These pesticides, like I said, they're everywhere, they're on the ground. Leaving your shoes in the outside world outside can also make a difference. The last kind of overarching topic are the endocrine disruptors. So the pesticides and the heavy metals, like I said, they get into the cells, they're toxic directly to the cells. These endocrine disruptors are kind of a newer phenomenon, and basically these are chemicals that have been found to directly impact the hormones in your body. The most famous one is BPA or bisphenol A. It has been pretty conclusively shown that is a very strong estrogenic compound. Other ones are phthalates, PFOA, PBDE, what those stand for are pretty long names, perfluorooctanoic acid and polybrominated diethyl ether. Where you'll find these, personal care products and cosmetics, and then food processing and plastics. So BPA, this is a chemical that's put into plastics to kind of make them softer and moldable so that they can actually be formed where you want them to be. And you also find them in canned foods too. So buying a canned food doesn't necessarily mean you're not exposing yourself to something, you know, so you say, oh, it's fine, I'm not worried about drinking out of a plastic water bottle because I'm drinking out of a can. Many cans are lined on the inside with BPA as well. Another really big one is thermal receipts. So the gas station receipts, or the receipts you get when you're buying something, are laden with BPA. There have been studies where just touching a receipt, especially after washing your hands or having alcohol sanitizer on your hands and touching a receipt, you can absorb this across your skin and get into your blood system. BPA does cross the placenta, can affect the baby as well. It's really, like I said, really difficult to avoid. The ways we can minimize our exposure, switching from any kind of plastic container to a glass or a stainless steel. And this would be things for like Tupperware, food storage, water bottles, coffee, you know, cups that you take to go in the morning. If you do have plastic, don't microwave it. And if you buy something that's packaged in plastic, don't microwave it. Take it out of whatever container it's in, put it in some safe ceramic, glass, stainless steel, heat it up that way. Whatever you can do to avoid plastic water bottles is definitely for the best, especially if they've got the number 7 stamped on them. When the time is right, consider glass baby bottles as well. Next is the phthalates. This is also a plasticizer, similar to BPA, high in cosmetics, lotions, toys, flooring, processed foods. It's funny, you find it higher in food in folks that dine out more than they eat in, probably because the industrial food packaging process just has more phthalates in it by the nature of the fact that that's how their processing plants work. Ways to minimize this, similar to the BPAs, glass and stainless steel, try and choose fragrance-free products where possible, detergents, cleaning supplies, etc., and just take a look on the label and make sure that phthalates are not something that's necessarily high on the list of ingredients. In a similar fashion, Teflon, that usually has PFOA in it, PFOA, it's kind of a non-stick, but it does degrade off the Teflon and does get absorbed in the food. So non-stick cookware, there's a couple different ways to do it. Teflon is one of the more common ones, but ceramic non-stick, that does not have the chemicals in it, and that's safe. Honestly, it's the same price point as the Teflon stuff usually. So there's a couple of companies that just make ceramic non-stick cookware, and I would say that that's an easy switch if you're big into using your frying pans. Switching from Teflon to ceramic is a quick and easy, cost-effective way to minimize exposure there. And then lastly, the PBDEs. This is usually added to upholstery and textiles and carpets because it's a good flame retardant. We have over the years have found research showing that it has adverse effects in the environment from an endocrine disruptive standpoint. So there are starting to be alternatives put in place. These are commonly labeled RFRs. So you can take a look at that if you're looking into reflooring with carpets, or if you're looking at getting a couch upholstery, just make sure you ask about whether or not the fabric that you're choosing has PBDEs in it, because again, these are absorbed across the skin. This is also a common thing because it's everywhere. It's on the ground, and so you are picking this up on your shoes and on your clothes. So taking off your shoes and washing your hands when you come home, making that kind of a routine, limits the amount of exposure you have in your house. And so I can't stress that enough, how easy that is. You can't really talk about endocrine disruptors and environmental factors in general without really sounding doomsday-ish, because they're everywhere and you are most certainly exposed to some, if not all, of these chemicals in your day-to-day life. And so there's really no getting around that. But because of that, I want to kind of end by just summarizing that, yes, we're exposed, but minimizing your risk of exposure keeps you out of that high-risk category. Most of the studies that show real true adverse effects in fertility and just pregnancy outcomes in general are in folks that are in the highest exposure group, that kind of that high risk group. So whatever you can do to minimize that exposure, that risk category, will have a benefit. And now when we're doing nothing else, it feels like this is a reasonable time to kind of assess, hey, what's my day-to-day look like? Where am I exposing myself? You know, am I using plastic water bottles? Is it easy just to buy a BPA-free Nalgene or a stainless steel or glass water bottle and kind of move towards that? It's easy to get a carbon filter for your water faucet if you don't buy filtered water in general. These are, you know, quick things. And just whatever you can do, those small things can have a pretty decent impact in lowering your risk category and making a great positive outcome in the end of the day more likely. So summarize, when possible, cook at home. When possible, buy organic. Minimize processed food and food packaging. So farmers markets are kind of more and more the rage. Going to those and just picking up the stuff that you need for the week is a great idea. Ask those farmers that are there, hey, what are your practices? What pesticides do you use, if any, et cetera? Can't do it right now, but think about what that's going to look like whenever we do get back to normal, how you can maybe implement that in your life. Glass, stainless steel, those are our friends. Even plastic things that say BPA free, the reality is that they may not use BPA, but maybe they use, you know, BPF or another variant of bisphenol. And frankly, there are more chemicals out there than we can test. And we don't know all the chemicals in plastics, whether or not they are safe. It's great to buy BPA free when you can, but we're not sure if the next, you know, 2.0 version of BPA is any less harmful than BPA itself. So just avoiding plastics when possible is going to be very powerful. If you're interested in a specific product, or if you're interested in your local water to see, you know, what are the chemicals in my water? What can I do to minimize my exposure through everyday eating and drinking? You can go to certain websites. EWG.org is a great one. And then finally, this is another doctor just telling you that smoking is bad to avoid cadmium exposure. I really hope this has been somewhat helpful. It is really unnerving just talking to myself. I'm looking forward to the day when social distancing is no longer a thing and we can get back to having real conversations. But I wish everybody out there the very best, and thanks for tuning in to Fertility Answers Podcast. It's been my pleasure. Talk again soon, y'all.